The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about creating a better workplace and developing positive relationships where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague Roy Saunderson, and we're from the Recognition Management Institute. How are you doing today, Roy?
I'm doing very well today. Thanks, Max. And what an interesting opportunity for us today to talk about how to create a great workplace, and knowing that it begins with me, with myself.
And, yeah, you know, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I look at the research that keeps, you know, getting out there and supporting the whole mindfulness about being positive and engaged at work. And obviously that organizations would thereby be more successful as a result. Max, why do you think that there's such a resistance to some of these concepts, though?
Well, I think it's an interesting question when you think about behaviors in the workplace and why people are still resistant to serving others and maybe even giving more. And I think that's why today is a perfect segue with our guest today, who has written a book to exactly that point. As you know, Bob Berg wrote the book. And not only that, but he's written other books as well. So let me just introduce Bob here for just a minute. He's a speaker for corporations and associations internationally. He's included in Fortune 500 companies, franchises, numerous direct sales organizations. His critically acclaimed book, Endless Referrals, sold over 200,000 copies and continues to be used as a training manual for top sales organizations throughout the world. And his books have been translated into 18 different languages. His latest and newest book is called Go Give or Sell More, and exactly this behavior of how when we give, we actually get more in return, and that's really the conversation today. So coming back to your question, Roy, why are people reluctant to do this? I actually want to pose that question right to Bob. So, Bob, welcome to the show. And maybe with that, the first question, what's going on, and why are people reluctant to give more?
Well, Max and Roy, and first, thanks for having me on your show. It's really a pleasure to be here. I think when we say, you know, why are people reluctant to give more or to do something, I think we're kind of assuming a premise, and that is that statement is necessarily true. I think it's like anything else. It's a big world with a lot of people. So, you know, why are people reluctant? I think some people are and some people aren't. What we found with John David Mann, my excellent co-author of the Go Giver series, The Go Giver and Go Giver Sell More, what we found is that the people who embrace these principles we espouse in the books, they are doing that. You know, the most productive leaders definitely have what we call an other orientation. It's the difference between being I-oriented, I-focused, or other-focused. The best leaders, the top producers, they all tend to put other people's interests first. Now, we need to make sure that we understand that as we say this, this doesn't mean when we say put other people's interests first, we don't mean that in a self-sacrificial way. We don't mean that in terms of being a martyr. What it means is simply, as we talk about the premise of being a go-giver, I guess you could say, is that shifting one's focus from getting to giving, in this case meaning constantly and consistently adding value to people's lives, is not only a nice way to live life, but a very financially profitable way as well. And if you look at the best leaders out there, the best salespeople, the best producers, they all have that way of really focusing on how they can best serve the other person.
And as you mentioned there, Bob, I appreciate that comment, that it's not an either-or proposition, meaning that it's either about you or about others and that there's no go-between. It seemed like you're talking about an enlightened self-interest where you can be a service to others and still get what you want as well. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And there's a because of the way that we've been sort of taught that the world operates, and this is, by the way, from many, many different areas, whether it's a combination of upbringing, environment, schooling, the media, television shows, movies. There's so much negative program, really lack programming. And there are so many teachings that, you know, there are two types of people. There are the nice people who are typically poor, you know, but happy. If you look at any new movie like that, right, they're always poor but happy, and they're always being taken advantage of, put down, put out, stepped on by the rich people who are mean and nasty and, you know, cowardly and have no soul. So there's that dualism. It's one or the other. John and I call this the treacherous dichotomy. Actually, that's John's term. I think it's a great term, treacherous dichotomy. I refer to it as the false dilemma. And a false dilemma can really be defined as the unnecessary use of the word or. Again, let's go back to, do you want to be wealthy or happy, as though you can only be one or the other? Are you a nice person or do you finish first? You can only be one or the other, right? And then are you a giver or a receiver, as though you just, no, they're, that's a dualism. And really, life is much more unified than that. so yes, exactly. We believe that, you can and should be both.
And yet, while this is true, and I think what you've said, you know, a lot of people are practicing this, there are still some that aren't. Obviously, the reason why you wrote the book is that this is the secret sauce, if you will.
Sure.
It's almost counterintuitive, isn't it, to some of the world behaviors that we think, because some of these messages you've talked about, like this media saying, hey, you got to take care of yourself, you got to take care of yourself, and it becomes very self-centered, almost to the point that, you know, you meet people on the road, or you're even driving down the street and people cut you off, or you know, and we all have these self-serving behaviors out there. So you wrote the book because there must have been some kind of need. Is that not true?
Oh, no, I think that's right. I agree with you. It's there are all sorts of people, and there's certainly a whole bunch, probably more people, who are as you describe. I just don't think it's everyone, or even close to everyone, because the fact is there are many, many successful people. And what we found is that, you know, John's and my writing is very counterintuitive in a sense. It's contrarian, I guess you could say, but only to those people who have not yet perhaps achieve the level of success they'd like to achieve. But people who are extremely successful, they are the ones that were the early adopters of the book, and they're the reason why this book hit the bestsellers list so fast. They just got these books for everybody in their organization. They started buying them from others. They started being evangelists of the message. So I just think it's a matter of, there's always going to be people, there's always going to be resistance to any idea that doesn't match up with a person's belief system. And we are all of us, we're all victims of our belief systems, our biases. A great book that was written on this years ago was The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And I thought he did just a magnificent job. He calls them agreements. I would call them belief systems. But he did a magnificent job of really citing exactly how we obtain our beliefs very unconsciously. They're given to us before, and they're programmed into us before we're old enough to reject them, reject the ones that are not serving. And it's, you know, again, it's a combination of things, but it's also a combination of thousands and probably millions of years of this building up. So, you know, it's tough to just, unless you can really stay conscious and look at everything and say, why am I thinking what I'm thinking? Is this necessarily correct? Who is saying this? How do I know it's true? And unless we can do that, and that's hard for any of us to do on a consistent basis, we're going to buy into things and probably not change. you know, if a good idea, and I know you guys have many great ideas that you go into corporations and teach and probably find that there's some people who are going to be resistant to them. And why? Well, whether it's somebody that has a personal agenda and doesn't want that change, whether it's a matter of their power, wanting to maintain power, maybe it's ignorance, or it could be just some people are slow to adapt. They're not early. I'm not an early adopter. Hey, I made the brilliant statement in the 90s that this thing called the internet will never actually take off.
Well, you're talking about something here that is just fantastic in that it is a little bit counterintuitive. And I want to go into that a little bit more. Stanford and Berkeley professors recently did some research that suggested that the people who get more power, more money, more titles, the more ego-centered they become, more ego-driven and self-centered they become, meaning that they're even less concerned about others and feel like they're above the rules. And I think none of us are immune. None of us are immune from being, you know, because we're imperfect. But what would you recommend that, then, to people to stay more grounded? Because it sounds like there's some self-awareness that is key, yet even that is hard to attain.
Well, it's a good question. And again, I'm going to go back to checking my premise on that. And I'm going to say, okay, the research from them suggests. But, you know, where are their biases in the research? Again, I'm not saying
sure.
They're not right. I'm just saying, you know, you hear research and surveys and so forth. And yet, you know, sometimes you got to take them with a little bit of a grain of salt. I look at something like more power, more money, more titles one obtains and say, well, okay, well, with that, the more ego-driven, self-centered they become, there seems to be a causality suggested there that it's the power, the money, and the title that causes that person to be that way. You know, my feeling is what more money, power, and title does is it pretty much just reveals a person's character.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to changing that character. You know, there's the old saying, if you're a stingy person who gets wealthy, now you're just going to be a stingier wealthy person. If you're a very generous person and all of a sudden you get wealthy, you're going to be a more generous person because you've got the money to make, you know, that aligns with your values and principles. So, you know, I'm not saying that research is wrong. I'm just saying I don't know that it's necessarily correct. Now, by the same token, let's face it, we all know people who, you know, came across as humble and nice and what have you, and then they did achieve power, they got some money, and they did seem to change. And again, whether they changed or whether their character was simply revealed by now having the means, you know, you see somebody who's a 20-year-old kid who goes into pro baseball, basketball, football, whatever, and is just adulated by everyone, and they can't do any wrong, and they're showered with all this praise for nothing other than being able to, you know, to play a sport really well, and they can become arrogant and everything else. You know, you can really see how that happens.
Sure,
but, you know,
sure.
But what about a person who's an adult and who should know better than that? How do you stay grounded? And, you know, I think really what you've got to do, in a sense, is just sort of reframe it a little bit and say, gosh, you know, although you can take pleasure in having worked hard to earn some of these great opportunities, you also know that, you know, it was also a matter of being blessed to have the brain power, maybe growing up in the family that provided you, created a context where you had a really terrific work ethic, and but for the grace of God, you could be that person standing in the bread line instead of, in the executive suite. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Really understanding it's a good idea to stay grounded.
Well, and so basically then, you know, knowing where you came from, right?
Yeah.
And so knowing where you came from and knowing that you stand on the backs of others who have served you to get you where you are. So it's a sense of gratitude.
Yeah. Yeah, I think gratitude. I think you make a great point. You know, to the degree that you have gratitude, that's the degree you're going to stay grounded. Because when you have gratitude, you realize that, and I don't want to say it's not you. It is you. But it's you, and it's also a lot of really cool things that have happened along the way. And I'm not in any way saying luck. We create our own luck. But what it just means is, you know, we still are in an environment where something like this can happen.
Sure, sure. Bob, this is a wonderful conversation. Obviously, these segments go so fast, but we have to take a quick break for the advertisers to get in their piece. So but we'll be right back, obviously. This is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson with our guest, Bob Berg. And you're listening to Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with myself, Roy Saunderson, and Max Brown, and our guest today, Bob Berg. Bob, as we were just talking about the whole issue of this whole power, the need to get in the right space and not allowing character to change, what would you say are the most common mistakes that people make that prevent them from living a better way?
Well, when you say a better way, what are we really talking about? A nicer way, a kinder way, a more...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, incivility in the workplace. There is a lot of people who don't seem to look at the great potential they have in their lives. Well, what gets in the way for people?
Well, I mean, I think on an individual basis, I think it always goes into, what you're living for. What are your goals? What are your values? What is it that you, when you come to work, what is it you're looking to accomplish? If you're looking to make a paycheck, well, you're probably going to do the least you can in order to get the most amount of money, and probably not be very productive. When instead you're focused on bringing value to the organization, bringing value to your prospects, customers, clients, or whatever it is you're doing, well, then that's going to be the big difference. When we say in the Go-Giver, we talk about law number one, the law of value, which simply says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. We don't mean that you give yourself away and that you make less money than what you're putting out, or that you don't make a profit. What we mean is that you create an experience for that other person. In the case of a customer, you create a buying experience where they feel so good about the interaction that they are just ecstatic at having traded their money for your product or service, while meanwhile you make a great profit. Now, if we're talking about in an organization where you're not necessarily in sales, so to speak, it means that you find ways to add value to that organization. You're other focused. You're looking at ways that you can be of great value. You know, there's an old story, and it's really kind of a neat story. I don't know really whether it's even true or not, because I've never actually checked it out factually. But the story about the foreman on a railway line, and one day a train comes up, and it's in there is the president of the railroad company, and he gets us, "Hey Dave, great to see you, come on in my cabin and let's talk for a while." And the foreman goes in there, and goes in there 30 minutes, comes back out, and one of his workers says, one of his the men in his crew says, "Wow, Dave, you know the president of the railroad?" And Dave says, "Yeah, he and I actually went to work 30 years ago for this company on the very same day. We both started out doing just what you're doing." And the guy says, "Now, wait a minute. You both started work on the same railroad, for the same railroad company on the same day 30 years ago. but you're a foreman of a crew, and he's president. How is that? And Dave said, yeah. Because 30 years ago, I went to work for, you know, $5 an hour, and he went to work for the railroad. So, you know, this boss, this president, went to work to add as much value as he could to the enterprise, while Dave, who was smart enough to understand it, you know, at this point in his life, realized he was going to work just to make a buck. And, you know, there's a big difference in bringing yourself to work for a buck and bringing yourself to work for a cause or an organization or a mission or, you know, what have you.
Yes.
So I think in many ways while the company hierarchy can certainly set an environment where people enjoy their work and are allowed to thrive and allowed to grow, it's still up to the individual to set the right attitude and have the right reason for doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So when we're dealing with a collective group of individuals, as corporations and companies are made up of, how on earth do you help organizations to help these kinds of positive changes?
Well, I think, and you guys certainly know much more about this than I do because that's really your specialty. But what I would go with is that it all starts with the leaders. It all starts with the leaders. Leadership comes from the top down. So you first got to have a leader that buys into the mission that they're talking about. You know, it's one thing to put a mission statement on the wall. It's another thing to actually live by it. So the leader buys into it first.
Yep.
Then the environment has to be created. Again, and I go back to those words, and I apologize for repeating myself, but there's really not a whole lot of new stuff under the sun. It goes back to that leader creating that environment where people feel good about the company, where they feel good about themselves, and where what this leader is looking to accomplish and what this leader wants his or her employees to accomplish works within alignment, works within the goals and values of the employees. And I think that's the key because, you know, you can order them to do something and they're going to do what they have to do and
right.
maybe do so to the point that they can, you know, that they don't sabotage it, at least not consciously or so that you can see. But unless they feel vested in the mission, well, now, you know, you don't have people who are really buying in. You know, a while back I read a great book called Making Your Company Human. It was written by a guy named Lee Heron. Now, Lee, most people would not know about, yet he's probably one of the best corporate leaders that's ever lived. And back in the, from the mid-60s on to the early 80s, he was brought in as CEO of O.C. Scott Company. And he really just brought them just great abundance. I mean, they were just hugely, hugely, hugely profitable. But he was loved by his people. He was a great leader who really put others first. He put his employees first. He put his customers first, not just in terms of lip service, but in terms of action. And early in his book, he wrote about where he got the idea of leadership as he espoused it. And if I can read a very quick passage to you. He writes, "My eyes were opened to this in an embarrassing way. Soon after being commissioned as a young Army officer near the start of World War II, I came back to camp with my troops, tired and hungry, and got in the mess line. An old sergeant came over and took me aside. I'll never forget what he said. 'Lieutenant,' he told me, 'when your men have been fed, if there's any food left, then you will eat. And after all your troops have been bedded down, if there's a place for you to lie down, then you will sleep.' This brief admonition," says Heron, "has had a more profound effect on me than anything else in my life. He said, I have never seen a better explanation of the responsibility of leadership."
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the level 5 leader that Collins talks about in his book. This is the level 5 leader that my friends Orrin Woodward and Chris Brady talk about in their book, Launching a Leadership Revolution. Does it sound contrarian? Yes, but these are the companies, these are the leaders who get buy-in from their people.
So in many ways, what you're suggesting is that it needs a leader to be that kind of individual that you described from the railroad situation, to really be the leader, to lead others to do the same thing.
Well, you know, I think that's a great point. It does. But, you know, remember, you're always dealing with individuals.
Yep.
And all, and you know, individuals have their own motives and their own, again, belief systems and their own ways of doing something. And you're not going to necessarily get 100% buy-in. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
What you need to do as that leader is you create that environment by showing that you're one of them.
Right.
My friend Dondi Scumaci, I just did an interview with her, and she was talking, and it was a great story. She was, and I think you may know Dondi from Twitter, at Dondi Scumaci, and she has a book called Career Moves, which is an absolutely magnificent, magnificent book. But she was telling me a story in her banking career, because she was an executive with some very big banks. There was a situation where they were trying to get their tellers to more proactively sell some of the bank's services. This is 15 years ago or so.
Okay.
And no matter how much they put the instruction out there, no matter how much they were, you know, asked to do that, and these were lovely people, the tellers. I mean, they're very nice, very helpful. There was no bad attitude. It was just a matter they just didn't feel comfortable doing it, and they didn't do it. And finally, they brought Dondi in and said, you know, said, can you work with them? Well, what Dondi did is she said, you know what? Let me get behind the desk where the tellers are, the teller station. Let me see what they're going through. And she actually, for 2 weeks, she was a teller. Now she had someone there helping her to take the money and do the accounting, because she didn't really know what she, you know, in terms of that. But she was there with
right.
them. She got there early when they got there. She stayed as late as they stayed. She saw exactly what the transactions were like with people, how it took so much time to do this, where you could fit. And what happened was she got the buy-in from the tellers. Because
mm-hmm.
they knew she wasn't there from an ivory tower telling them what to do but not doing it. She actually knew. She had empathy for them. And she let them know that she was willing to be part of that team and understand what they were going through. And, of course, at that point, you know, they got it. And they started doing a magnificent job of selling these extra services, which was very profitable to the bank and of course, was very profitable to the people that they helped.
Great. You've shared some great examples with us today, Bob. It looks like we're due for another short intermission. So we welcome you to come back and join us for more of Real Recognition Radio with Max Brown and myself, Roy Saunderson, reminding you to keep it real.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, with our guest today, Bob Berg, and now another special guest, and what a wonderful delight for us and a treasure for us to be able to have Bob Berg joined by Lolly Daskal. Let me introduce Lolly quickly, and then we'll continue this conversation as we've been talking about how do we improve and how really creating a great workplace begins with ourselves. And Bob's given us some great insight that way. Lolly's going to add to this conversation as a life coach, a teacher, a speaker, and a force for positive change in the lives of those she encounters. At an early age, Lolly was destined to be an artist, and once orphaned and homeless, Lolly battled her way into art school from New York to Paris and back and in pursuit of her dreams. She became a successful entrepreneur, a business and personal advisor to others, and a powerhouse source of inspiration and guidance for individuals and businesses who seek to find a way to be more successful and have a more meaningful life. She's passionate about helping others discover their true purpose in life and help them implement the principles necessary to fulfill their personal destinies. So obviously, we're delighted to have you both on the show. Lolly, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Welcome. Thank you so much. What an honor to join. You're such wonderful men, and thank you so much.
Well, we are grateful to have your voice, and obviously so grateful for the work that you do. I met you and Bob, obviously, both on Twitter, and it's been a fantastic conversation. I've enjoyed both of the things I've learned from both of you, really, and delighted you guys would take the time to be with us on the show. And, you know, Lolly, you also have a wonderful show, and so many things you're doing that I would like to be able to get a little bit of information on. In fact, to begin, your motto really is lead from within. Can you tell us more about that and what that means?
Absolutely. Lead from within is about stepping inward. It's allowing you to tap into yourself about who you are and what you're all about. It's really about tapping into your authentic self. It's about, you know, the truth that drives you, what excites you, and what ignites you. And leading from within is about creating leaders within your life. It's about leading from a place of power and inner wisdom and intuitiveness and authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Well, how it sounds wonderful, and I think people would love to know, how can they start to do that more today? So those who might be struggling with how to do this, what would you recommend?
I have a wonderful program, which I put in quotes, and I call it the Courageous Question. And I did this for myself, as you mentioned in the bio. At 16, I became homeless and orphaned very suddenly. And it wasn't something that I was planning on my life. And I had to, at 16 years old, I had to ask myself questions and say, what is it that I want to do? Who do I want to be in my life? Where do I want to go? Because honestly, I had no plan. I had no money. I had no family. I really had nothing. And I had to pull myself up and say, okay, what is it that I want? Where do I want to go? And when I was able to answer those questions, when I was able to really define and clarify what I want, I was then able to implement a plan and follow it. Because honestly, 2 years later, I was able to implement exactly what I said I was out to do at 16. And I was only able to do that by really clarifying and simplifying what is it that I wanted. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sitting here thinking about a story like that, though, and how you responded so proactively, while others might have said, well, I'm a victim of my circumstance, you know, that actually being put in a situation as such as yours like that might turn the other way and be lost as a result. And it's interesting, isn't it, that you responded so differently than maybe someone else might have done.
I think life happens to all of us, and you don't have to have anything traumatic or dramatic to happen to your life. I was one of those people that I had an unfortunate situation, but the truth is, every single person on the call that's listening, anything that happens, you can take that situation and ask yourself, what is it here that I'm supposed to be learning? Where can I go from here? How can I make this work for me? You know, standing and wallowing in something doesn't really work. We can look at it. I looked at it, you know, that day that I became homeless and orphaned, trust me, it was 3 hours before I said to myself, this has really happened to me. And then I said, okay, now what am I going to do? Standing here and wallowing it is not going to give me a roof over my head. It's not going to feed me. I had no place to sleep that night. So where am I going? What am I going to do to fix this? And so that really, really works. So anybody that's feeling that stuck or not sure about what's happening in their lives, ask themselves where they want to go and then start taking the baby steps that you need to implement it.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've been talking to Bob about, you know, the go-giver, and how people who give, maybe they might seem counterintuitive, but that those who give actually get more as in return. And it sounds like you're led by a similar passion, which is giving and helping others, and that has led you to where you are.
You know, I know my clients hear me say this like a mantra. I say there are three things that you need to do in life that will make you successful. Number one is find out your purpose. Number two, live that purpose to the fullest potential. And number three, go out and help others. give and give and give. Because the truth is, our mission, our vocation, our whole life is about developing ourselves so we can help others and give to them. So, yes, I'm totally in aligned with what I loved Bob's book, and I've read it many, many times. And actually, Bob was a guest on our show, and he was very, very inspirational. So you guys are very lucky to have him on here. Hi, Bob.
Thank you. Hi, Lolly.
I tell you, we're delighted to have you both. In fact, Lolly, you know, you have any questions for him, you feel free. We're just grateful. You know, Roy and I come from a foundation of, we believe there's an abundance that needs to be delivered and continue to be delivered. And Bob brought that up wonderfully in the first segment when we talked about there's a lot of people doing some wonderful work out there. We just need to bring it more to light and let more people know that there's a possibility. Last night I was actually with a group of MBA students telling them, just think bigger. Just think bigger than you have in the past. Don't get caught in one time zone is what I told them. And hoping that, you know, it's beyond themselves. And really some of that came from what Bob had shared. But Lolly, you talk about this as well in your show. Can you tell us a little bit again about You Matter and some of the concepts behind what you're doing?
Absolutely. I just want to share the why it's called You Matter, which is very important and dear to me. You know, my story is a personal story, and it's what drives me every single day in my life. When I became homeless and orphaned, I was told that I did not matter and that I would not matter in the world. Mm-hmm. And when I heard that message, I believed it for 5 minutes, because the truth is, each and every single one of us matters. What we do, what we think matters. And it was a very natural progression from what I do in the world about creating leaders and creating businesses that matter, that there should be a radio show that talks about people that matter. And sometimes people think that you have to be somebody famous, or you have to have written a book, or you have to have discovered something. That's not true. Every single person listening on this call today matters. What you do matters. What you think matters. Yes, there's abundance out there. Go out and grab it with both hands and know that it's yours. You know, some people come to me with poverty consciousness in a business, and they say, well, I don't know how I'm going to make it. I said, you don't understand. It's out there. Just go out and grab it. Be who you're supposed to be. Dream big because it's yours. So, yes, I believe in the concept, and I know Bob does too.
Absolutely. Bob, anything you would add to that?
Oh, no, I think she said it magnificently. You know, I when I hear Lolly's story, and of course I've heard it before, and it's a wonderful story, it's an amazing story. You know, when she says about how, you know, for 5 minutes she kind of felt sorry for herself, for 5 minutes she bought into what they said, but she was, you know, she was homeless. She had nowhere to go, and I, you know, to this day, I'm amazed that she was able to just, it's, you know, and 16 years old, to be able to deal with that.
Yes.
Really, in, you know, in such a productive way. I don't know, I can't imagine how I would have done that at 16, never mind at 52.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Lolly, I'm so grateful to hear your story, actually, and to understand that you can respond so differently than, and that we do have choices in the way we respond, quite frankly. It's been wonderful to have you both here today. I'm so grateful. We only have one segment left, but before we take that break, I want to just tell listeners that there is an opportunity here for all of us to be able to think bigger than what we've done in the past, and we don't have to just respond and naturally be angry when bad things happen to us. We can actually respond a different way. Lolly, you've been a perfect example of that today in sharing that. Bob, with the things you've written about in your book, and hopefully we can get that and summarize a few of these concepts in this last segment. Before we do that, we are going to take a quick break, so please join us in a few minutes on Real Recognition Radio as we continue with our guests, Bob Berg and Lolly Daskal. Thank you so much for both of you for being here, obviously, as we continue to talk about how a great workplace begins with me, with ourselves. For Real Recognition Radio, this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown. We'll be right back.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Real Recognition Radio. Let's continue our conversation today with Bob Berg and Lolly Daskal, our guests today, and learn some final pointers on how a great workplace begins with me. And when we think about looking at life and the difficulties and challenges that we can all face, we all know that having that positive, and I know, Bob, you talked earlier about gratitude, but how do appreciation and gratitude play a role in your lives today? And maybe we can start off with yourself, Lolly.
Gratitude and appreciation is number one in the forefront in my life every single day. And what I've come to notice, because for me, when I shared a little bit, you know, when I was 16, and what I held very, very dear to me, my family and my home and my community, I lost it very, very quickly. And from that moment on, I realized that I was very, very aware of what was happening in my life, that everything that I had, from food, which at certain times I was very, very hungry and I didn't know where my next meal was coming from. So when I had the food, I was grateful. Having a roof over my head on a certain night, I was very grateful. I remember weeping and saying, wow, I have some place to sleep. So being grateful and appreciation is very dear to me. Now, a lot of clients come to me and they talk to me about, well, you know, there's so much going on in my life and I'm so scared about what's happening, or I'm so stuck in life. And I have a little trick that I want to share with everyone, and this is maybe could help the people on the call. Do you know that you cannot have more than one thought of it at a time? So if you're scared, or if you're feeling stuck, or if you're feeling miserable or unhappy, but if you take that moment and all you do is think about how grateful you are, you don't have room for feeling unhappy. You don't have room for fear. So get busy. Start counting your blessings. Start appreciating the people in your life. All those moments of fear, all those moments of being stuck are going to dissipate, because you can't have two things happening at the same time. So start now. Start really appreciating. Make lists in the morning. I have a practice that I do every night and every morning. I write in the morning about what I'm grateful for. At night, I say out loud what I appreciate. And so if you can start two of those things, number one, replace your thoughts of stuckness and fear with gratitude and appreciation. Or if you're good at journaling, start writing about all the wonderful things in your life. Because if you start noticing the wonderful things in your life, more wonderful things will show up. And that has been my mantra from the very early age.
Mm-hmm. So in many ways, Lolly, it was that positiveness about viewing life amidst your challenges that must have motivated you to keep going.
I never looked at myself as positive. I've always looked at myself as passionate. And the truth is, I'm very passionate about being who I am. I'm very passionate about allowing others to be the best that they can be. And that is something that has driven me from a very early age. And I think from being passionate, I guess I am positive. Maybe not always. I can be intense, as you can tell. But I'm more passionate about life and about what life has to offer, because I think there's so many opportunities for each one of us to rise above where we are to where we want to be.
Right, right. And Bob, how has appreciation and gratitude contributed to you in your life?
Well, my life changed on the day that I decided to become more appreciative for everything. For whatever reason it is, and I don't know why, but I had a habit of focusing on what I didn't have as opposed to what I did have. And this was for a good part of my life. It was, you know, well into my 30s. And I just, you know, people would say, well, he's very ambitious. He's not satisfied. He wants to. But you know what? None of, that's a lot of baloney, because really the fact is, you know, in the sages said, and my dad, who always quoted this to me, quoted the sages as saying, who is a rich person? And the answer is that person who rejoices in their lot. In other words, that person who is, who feels gratitude for what they have, that person, whether it's family, their health, whether it's all the other blessings that we have. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to be satisfied and not go further. So there really needs to be no dichotomy between having gratitude and yet still wanting more.
Right.
Okay. With me, it was just, for whatever reason it was, I focused on what I didn't have. Now, I did some reading and studying and learned that how important gratitude was, and I decided to make a change in my life. I decided to focus on the gratitude. Now, at one point, I was studying with the works of Ben Franklin, his autobiography, and I came up with a great idea, not an idea on my own, nothing original, but from reading Ben. He had developed a way, a course, on how to improve certain character traits that really were not working for him, and how to develop them. He did this thing over 13 weeks where he would focus on a different trait every week, just focus intently on improving himself in that area. And, of course, there are 13 weeks if times 4 are 52, so you can do that course 4 times in a year.
Right.
And for me, excuse me, terribly, the linchpin, if you will, was gratitude. To me, without gratitude, none of the other traits mattered. So that was my lead off. That was my first one. And I decided to just focus, focus, focus on everything I was grateful for. I did a lot of studying on the topic, reading books by a mentor of mine, Rabbi Zelig Bliskin, who wrote on gratitude and happiness. And there were many exercises he gave that would help you be able to focus on the great things that we had and the abundant blessings. Well, I worked at it. I mean, this was just not something where I made a decision and boom, it happened. I had to work very hard on it. But once I did, and once I mastered gratitude, my life was never the same. It's been so much of a joy since that happened. And it's been about 20 years or so, and maybe a little less, but I'd say about that. And what a difference in your life. It doesn't mean your life is different. It just means that you have gratitude for what you have. Now, the interesting thing is, it's almost like the more gratitude you have, the more good does come your way, because you're positioning yourself nearer the source of all good things. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're in line for better things to happen.
Mm-hmm. So if we know that we, in creating a great workplace, it begins with me, and you've both eloquently described the ways in which appreciation has made a difference to you. How can we get organizations to create this culture of appreciation? Lolly?
I think it's very important to have appreciation in organizations, in companies. I think when you have appreciation, when you give gratitude to what someone has done, they will show up and do a better job next time. I think as organizations, we need to get in touch with individuals, see what they're about, give them gratitude, appreciate them. And when we do that, their work will get better. The interesting thing is, I heard Bob speak in the first segment, and I just want to add to that a little bit about when an individual, he talked about where does it start from, he was talking about leaders need to show up and then everybody will follow. I think as individuals, each one, you see, you don't have a title really to do great work. I think
right.
that each person knows that they themselves, if they show up and do great work, mm-hmm. then as a team, it will be a team of excellence. As a whole, it will be an excellent team. I think each individual needs to know that they play a big part in what is happening in an organization. They're not just a manager. They're the manager. They're not just an account manager. They're the account manager. And so when someone is doing a job of excellence, I think it's very important to appreciate them and to show and to really pay homage to their strengths and to what they've attributed to the organization. I think it's very important.
That's wonderful. I want you to know, to both of you, Bob and Lolly, this has been a great show where I think we're looking at the individual and their contributions to really making a difference and creating better workplaces. Bob, for our listeners today who would love to be able to get in touch with you or learn more about what you do, where would you recommend that they reach out to you at?
I welcome them to go to my website, which is www.berg, and that's BURG.com. And while there, they can download chapter one of three of my books, Endless Referrals, and of course, The Go-Giver and Go-Givers Sell More, co-authored with John David Mann. They can check out my blog and connect with me on Twitter and Facebook and so forth. It's all pretty much there right at the site.
Wonderful. And Lolly, how about for yourself, as our listeners might want to know more about what you do?
If anybody wants to connect with me, you can find me at www.lollydaskal.com. And I have a new program out that I just started the other week, and I've been planning this program for over a year. It's something that I really, really worked on, and I think this is my masterpiece. What it's called is Branding Your Story. What it is about each individual has a story to tell. It doesn't have to be a dramatic story, but it has to be a story about who they are, where they've been, and where they're going. Once they know who they are, they can create a business, a life, a relationship that can be very successful. So check out that program. It's new, it's brilliant, and it's masterful. So I hope to see you there. And if you have any questions, I'm very active on Twitter. Find me on Twitter under Lolly Daskal. And let's have a conversation.
Well, wonderful. And thank you for this conversation we've had with both of you today. I would like to thank you both for being on our show. If people would like to learn more about us, Max and I, and the Recognition Management Institute, you can find us at realrecognition.com. We'd encourage you to send your comments and suggestions to us by emailing us at feedback@realrecognition.com. Until next time, this is Roy Saunderson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.